scratching because the guy's been hung from a tree limb and his feet are scratching on the roof of the car.
No, he's been decapitated and it's the blood from his severed neck that's dripping on the car and it's going drip, drip. No, he wasn't decapitated. He was gutted with a hook. That's the way I heard it.
Look, you're all wrong. They get back to the girl's house and they find the lunatic's bloody hook in the car door. Now that's the original story. That's the way it really happened.
Hey, none of it really happened. It's a bullshit ghost story to begin with.
I think he's dead.
Who is he?
Can't tell. His face is all messed up.
Oh my God, this isn't happening. Island.
That's not possible. Afraid the last ferry left a couple hours ago and there won't be another one for days. We have a storm coming.
From Chopping Mall, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues for an epic presentation, double bill, number two of I Know What You Did Last Summer, and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, the film's immediate sequel from 1997-1998. So it's going to be interesting to revisit this double bill of trendy horror, in inverted commas. But yes, here we are, episode 99, and I'm back with Eric, Joseph, and Nathan. So how are you doing, Nathan?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Okay, I just need to cough there. So yes, I'm doing better now. I was able to cough.
How dare you?
I know, I'm sorry. I was holding it in, as it were. So yes, I'm good. I just got back from Berlin. So I've been jet-setting around, and that was
That's
fun.
That's where hipsters go. For their oldest, just saying.
Oh, so you went from goth to hipster.
It's gone from goth to hipster.
Well, I didn't see... Well, there were quite a few hipsters there, but I wasn't too... We went to the Stasi Museum, which was quite good fun.
Did you go to the wall?
Went to the wall, yes.
David Hasselhoff played on that wall.
There wasn't... I was disappointed there wasn't actually a painting of David Hasselhoff on the wall.
Or a monument to him.
No, sadly no. But... it was, yeah, it's an interesting city. It's still quite knackered in lots of ways, but we went up that big television tower, the one that looks, it's in all the 1960s or the early 70s spy movies, and had a vodka martini at the top.
Did Berlin take your breath away, do you think?
It was good. I enjoyed it. But it's, we went to a gig there. We went to see, do you remember Lena Lovitch?
I do indeed.
I don't think he got the joke, Eric.
No, I don't think he did, but we'll bypass that. Yeah.
I did. What, Berlin? Take my breath away.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. I just chose to ignore it. I did get it, but I just, I don't know.
Lena Lovitch, I am familiar with her work, yes.
Yes, okay. So we went to see her at this kind of very strange, it was kind of, it was almost like a big goth club with lots of people in rubber and leather.
That's Germany for you.
It is indeed. Actually, even when we were on the tube, there was an old man looking very respectable from the neck up, but from neck down, he was head to toe in rubber.
Mm.
And he even had rub. So you come across that kind of manner before.
Yes, because this is about 15 years ago. I was traveling overland across Europe and we stopped in a lay-by because the driver needed to go wee-wee. And a man dressed head-to-toe in rubber appeared from the trees. And he quickly got back into the car and we drove away.
Right. Well, this man, he had like a rubber tutu and his gloves. He had like flesh-coloured rubber gloves on. But everyone just seemed to be quite normal in Germany. But yes, but that's Germany for you. But enough of my Berlin adventures. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I haven't been to any rubber fetish clubs, I'm afraid. So my life is completely boring compared to yours, Justin.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Eric. We know you've been around. But I'm glad to hear you're doing okay. And Joseph, how about you?
I know who gave Eric his last Hummer.
A Hummer is a type of car, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that a car?
Well, sure.
Yay. Oh, who was it?
Yeah, who was it?
Was it Oprah?
Yeah, it was Ben Willis.
Well, we're going to have, I'm sure there's going to be lots of those jokes. And of course, we're going to look forward to Eric's joke of the week, which we hope will be I Know What You Did Last Summer related.
It is I Know What You Did Last Summer related.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. So, but yeah, we've got slightly streamlined show today, only because we're covering two films. So there'll be no talking points, and we're going to rattle through some recently seen, and we've got a bit of feedback to close the show with. But let's before we get on to The Hook and all that entails, let's talk about what we've seen recently. So, Nathan, I believe you finally caught up with one of the films that everyone else has seen. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Babadook. I finally got to watch it. I'm afraid I have to side with Joseph on this one. Thought it was a really, really, really good film. Now, like I said, I mean, like I told him, I do get that the little kid is annoying and I wanted to throw him out a window many, many times during this film. But I love the creature itself and I love the metaphor the creature provides for the film. I just think it was really well done. If I would have changed anything, I probably would have toned down the kid's behavior, you know, so he was a little bit more bearable to watch.
Okay. Well, it's always healthy to have a messy split on the show. So,
yeah, cause normally it's you three against me.
Well, yes, but, to be fair, Nathan, you do tend to like more films than not. Would you say it was better than Blood Lake?
Well, I mean, I don't know if we can go that far.
Well, there you go.
let's not go nuts.
It'll be interesting to. I'm looking forward to revisiting. I'm not in any great hurry, but now I know what to expect. But yeah, it's good to know that there's a mixture. I think it's, you know, we top and tail with It Follows, don't we? Which I think, Joseph, you caught, didn't you?
Yes, I caught up with the rest of the world and saw It Follows. I've seen it twice now. I saw it again last night. The first time, I'll be honest, I liked it a lot, but some of it left me, I don't know, just feeling like kind of empty inside. But I did have a really bad theater experience, like a lot of noisy teenagers and people getting up and down through the aisleways and eating loudly. So, you know, I kind of want to reserve my opinion, you know, after seeing it a second time. And needless to say, that was a smart move because I really, really love this film. I guess it's, you know, it's getting a lot of hype and I think it deserves it. I don't think it's the second coming of horror like a lot of people think it is, but it is very, you know, very respectable throwback to stuff like, you know, John Carpenter and Wes Craven. Has a lot of great, you know, atmosphere and some really good scares. And it's an original story and a great soundtrack. So a definite, you know, thumbs up. I'd say I like it as much as the Babadook. I'd say I like them about the same. I don't think I could pick between the two because they're kind of getting compared like elsewhere. Like, well, I like this one better. I like that one better. But I think they're kind of fundamentally different, you know, just kind of hold them up to one another. But I like them both about the same. Really good time. I can't wait to see it like at home on my big screen TV, you know, all alone. So I think that'll be a good thing.
So did you see it at the cinema again?
I saw it, you know, I saw it, it opened like in one cinema here, and I had like a kind of a bad theater experience. So, and then I went to see it again last night because it opened at a different theater. And, well, I went back to the same theater, but it's opened at a couple more theaters around here now. But I enjoyed it a lot more the second time, you know, with like, there was only like two other people in the audience when I went to see it. So
it worked a lot better. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Have you heard about the potential sequel to it? They're talking about doing a sequel called Follow It. So there you go. But that's because it's made quite well, not huge amounts of money, but for a film that will
obviously... It'll get a remake in about a year.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it will. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming remake of I Know What You Did Last Summer shortly. But Nathan, is there anything else you'd seen?
No, actually, there hasn't been, but I wanted to say something about, Joseph mentioned that his theater experience was really bad the first time around. I actually read a story last night that, this woman had went to the movies and the teenagers behind her were being very noisy and kicking her chair. And she turned around and shushed them and they waited for her when she left the theater and attacked her. And like her face was all like messed up where they had just beat her up basically. And I'm like, this is the caliber, I guess, of teenagers I would have expected at the theater Joseph went to as well, since that's the one I go to.
Right. Okay. Well, it's sort of very sad to hear that, isn't it?
It's really not worth it going to the movies anymore. I mean, people are rude. You're spending a ton of money just to, you know, to deal with people's rudeness. It's just not worth it.
See, I go, I try to go during the week, just because there's not many people there. I mean, Friday night, Saturday night, just forget about it.
We'll talk a bit, because I used to work at a cinema many years ago, and I did a little while being an usher, and part of the usher's job was to stay in the film the whole way through, and if people were talking or being noisy, it was to tell them to shut up. I think it's probably like America now, but we don't have, if you go to cinema, that you don't have somebody in an usher watching the film anymore.
I don't think we've ever had anything like that.
No,
but we used to
have people would come in and check for like ticket stubs. Like sometimes if they'd miscount, they'd go in and make sure everyone had their ticket stubs. But we never have anybody in there like throwing people out. People get away with murder in theaters these days.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, no, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say, I think it's the Prince Charles cinema in London that they have usher ninjas. And they're people dressed all in black that if anyone gets their phone out, they creep up on them and take their phone off them, or creep up and tell people to shut up and things like that. So I think, you know, I would pay a little bit more to have an usher or somebody like not a security guard exactly, but somebody who was there that if people were being noisy or being annoying or checking their phones or taking phone calls or talking, that somebody would come along and throw them out or give them a warning. You know, I think more people would go to cinema potentially if they had, you know, they had that.
Yeah, so back in my day, in my youth, in our local cinema in Kilkenny, we used to have a vicious usherette. Used to go around with her torch, and heaven help anyone who spoke. In retrospect, she was kind of like Mrs. Voorhees. She was this real old battle axe called Kitty.
Well, I used to. There was one of the cinemas I worked at. There was one of the ushers had a hunchback and a beehive.
A hunchback and a beehive.
Exactly.
Yes. Wow. See, mention, you know, I very quickly, I don't want to take up too much time during recently seen, but I finished out the Chattanooga Film Festival. And, you know, this is the first film festival I've actually been to. So it was interesting because I went to get to see Joe Bob Briggs lecture about the South in film. And that was a lot of fun. And I got to meet Elijah Wood, and you guys know I really like him, so that was fun. And the next day I went and saw What We Do in the Shadows, and I thought that movie was hysterical. It's really, really funny, and it's kind of like a horror comedy.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. So I'm sure I'll get around to it soon. I'm not sure if it's been released in the UK yet. But you
got to see it. It's so funny.
It's been in Gone, I'm pretty sure, Justin.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, so it'll be out on Blu-ray or something soon.
Okay, cool. Okay, excellent. Well, Joseph, you talked a little bit about what you... Well, is that the only thing you want to talk about, or is there anything else?
Yeah, that's all I've seen since our last show.
Okay, right, thank you. Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, really, the only thing, the horror thing I've seen is the Boogeyman, the Uli Lommel film, has come out in Blu-ray over here, and I watched that, and it looks incredible, actually. Blu-ray has really, really cleaned it up quite nicely. It's a film we possibly might cover in the future, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's a former video nasty and a film I caught up with possibly in the early 90s, and I love it. I cannot see why it gets critical praise from certain places, because it is ridiculous and ludicrous and really, really trashy, but they're all the reasons I love it.
Fair enough. Yes. I mentioned, didn't I, I'm doing the liner notes for the sound re-release, which I sent off. So I watched the film myself actually recently, and I think it's quite an accomplished film. It's kind of an odd film, isn't it? But it is very trashy, but nowhere near as trashy as its sequel, or any of its sequels, actually. If you remember, yes, the part two with the Death by Electric Toothbrush.
Yes, and part two with the 45 minutes of the Boogeyman in it. Yeah.
Yes, it's in that grand tradition of Silent Night, Deadly Night, although that came later, didn't it? But maybe it's inspired by that bit sort of cheap-ass kind of filmmaking. But,
yeah. One other thing I watched, for my birthday, I got the Mad Max trilogy on Blu-ray from my sister. And I'd seen The Road Warrior before, but not the other two. And I was quite impressed by them. I thought they were fun. Part two in particular was fun, watching a character in a hockey mask. This was made in 1982, the same year as Friday the 13th, Part 3, so sheer coincidence. It's a hockey mask that is more angular, kind of like the one on the cover of the Friday the 13th, Part 5 American VHS release. Mm. But the character who wears it is called Humongous, again referencing another 1982 horror film. So, good movies, not horror, but I was kind of on a sci-fi action buzz over the last few weeks, so that's why I've been a bit lax with my horror watching.
Well, fair enough. Have you seen the trailer for the remake?
Not yet, no. What's it look like?
It looks incredible, I have to say. Yeah.
It looks very high octane, which kind of works pretty well.
Mm.
So,
It was great watching Tina Turner in Beyond Thunderdome with her.
She's great.
I've never seen anyone with cleavage so far apart, if you know what I mean. Like one boob is over here, and then they're sort of, you need to get a shuttle bus to the other boob.
excellent. Well, thank
I
you,
love
Eric.
The Mad Max movies, by the way.
Mm.
Yeah, good fun. When I was away in Germany, I watched I sort of downloaded a few things to watch, and
off iTunes or some other legitimate site.
Oh yes. Yeah. Well, no, I downloaded. I watched them on YouTube, I should say.
All right.
But I watched the Scream Queens are doing just on Cruise into Terror, which is the TV movie with Ray Milland, but also starring Christopher George and Linda Day George, as a boat, like a cruise, a very small cruise that goes off the coast of Mexico, and they find a sarcophagus from ancient Egypt, bizarrely, off the coast of Mexico, and it's this kind of, it was basically it's the son of Satan or whatever is in this sarcophagus. It's a mini sarcophagus that glows red eyes and pulsates. So it's this midget sarcophagus which possesses everyone, and it also has John Forsyth from Dynasty on it, and his wife becomes possessed and her nightie flies off. So that was quite entertaining. But the other film that I saw, which is a bit of the one I want to talk about very briefly, was another TV horror movie from the 1970s, which is very similar, and I think it may have been the inspiration for Cruise into Terror, which was The Horror of 37,000 Feet, which is the one set on aboard the 747 from London to Los Angeles or New York, I think, and they have an ancient druid stone aboard, which basically unleashes this kind of, well, all hell breaks loose on the plane. But it's incredibly cheesy. It's got William Shatner in it, of course. Chuck Connors, who was in Tourist Trap, slasher connection there. But this thing wants a woman who's on board, and to try and put them off the scent, what they do is they get this child's dolly, and then they put a hair in it and do this really like clown makeup on this dolly to try and get them the spirit to leave them alone. But it's incredibly trashy, and it's really good fun, and it's a bit like The Mist, where everyone suddenly goes from being normal, rational people to complete lunatics. Has anyone seen that?
What was it called again?
The Horror at 37,000 Feet.
No.
It's definitely worth checking out. If you're a fan of those kind of early 70s TV horrors, it's really cheesy, but it's got a couple of kind of creepy moments. It's kind of reminiscent in a kind of in a way to the Stone Tapes. I think are they called the Stone Tapes? The ones from I'm not sure if you're Stone Tapes now, actually. Yeah, the Stone Tape with Jane Asher, from 1972, which is a Nigel Neal adaptation, with another TV kind of movie, a British one, which is much, much creepier. It's like really scary, as opposed to this is really, really cheesy. But it has William Shatner as an alcoholic ex-priest on it, so you can imagine the caliber. But yeah, definitely worth checking out if you have a taste for cheese and American horror TV movies. So that was everything. That was our recently seen. So,
and Unfriended comes out next weekend.
Okay.
Oh, does it? I want to go see that.
I'm very excited.
Cool. Okay.
Is it getting a wide release here?
I think so. Yeah, because they're advertising it everywhere. Has it been released overseas yet?
No. Not that I'm aware of. No.
Let me know if you plan to go. I'm probably going to tag along.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely going.
Cool. Okay. Well, we'll probably talk about it next time on the big 100 episode in a fortnight, and we'll be announcing the film that we've decided to cover. And I know a lot of people on the Facebook page have tried to guess what the film is, and one person guessed correctly. But we'll let you know at the end of the show. And I think hopefully you'll all be pleased by what we've chosen. But yes, that's coming up. But before we get to that, we're going to launch into our double bill. And so here is the trailer for 1997's I Know What You Did Last Summer.
So the boy and girl are making out, right? When they hear over the radio that this lunatic killer's escaped from an insane asylum.
That's not the way it goes. The boy goes for help and the girl stays in the car and she hears this, like, scratching sound.
No, he's been decapitated.
No, he was gutted with a hook.
Mary! What's wrong with you? What the?
I think he's dead.
We can't just leave him here.
Oh, tell me, little Miss Prelaw, what's the charge for manslaughter?
We make a pact. Right here and now we take this to our grave.
For the last year, four friends have kept a secret.
Are you on drugs?
No.
Well, then what is wrong? I've had a rough year.
But not all secrets stay buried.
Somebody sent this to me.
Oh, my God.
Someone knows.
I know what you did last summer. Ooh.
What they thought would be a new beginning.
Toast to us.
Is becoming a dead end.
Somebody tried to kill you last night. We have to go to the police.
If you want to be dead, he could have done it.
And the mistake they made.
It was an accident.
There was no accident. It was murder.
What if he's still alive?
Hey! What are you doing here?
Is coming back to haunt them.
Oh, my gosh.
He's after me, too.
I got a letter.
I got run over. Helen gets her hair chopped off. Ah! Julie gets a body in a trunk, and you get a letter? That's balanced.
He's waiting for us to unravel.
The wait is over.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?
Last summer.
On the magic summer's night of high school's end, Julie, Helen, Ray and Barry get into Barry's new Beamer and drive out to celebrate their lives and hopes before them. But on the road they have a terrible accident, hit and kill a man. In the shock and panic that follows, they dump the body in the sea rather than reporting the accident. As the body sinks, the hand of the dead man breaks the surface in a last grasp at life, then disappears into the murky depths. The four friends realise they are now guilty of murder and swear to take their secret to their graves. But now someone is stalking them, someone who knows who they are, knows what they did last summer, and seeks revenge. I Know What You Did Last Summer is as I'm sure you know, if you're a fan of slasher movies, and if you're not, then why are you listening to the show? But is came hot on the heels of Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson's Scream from the previous year. It got criticism, I remember at the time, by people who said that Scream kind of cleverly inverted the slasher movie conventions, whereas I Know What You Did Last Summer celebrated them. But I love Scream, and I think it's a great movie, but also I Know What You Did Last Summer, what it did, it kind of in some ways prevented the slasher movie from descending directly into parody off the back of Scream, and actually showed you could do a straight ahead, even though it's a knowing take on the slasher movie. And so I'm thankful that it did that, and obviously its success. And I think in some ways, I Know What You Did Last Summer was perhaps more influential on the slasher movies that came after it than Scream was, perhaps. And we can talk about it a little bit later. But I've spoken about this before, but I remember seeing the trailer at the cinema and actually, you know, getting tingles and thinking, well, this is the slasher movie after Scream. It wasn't just a flash in the pan. The slasher movie was back. And for a couple of years, that was the case. And of course, the film was enormously successful. I think it made something like $125 million globally. And obviously spawned a sequel, which we're going to talk about shortly. Although I very much enjoy this movie, I prefer the sequel, and I'm perhaps alone in that, or maybe not. It'll be interesting to see what my fellow co-hosts think about that, and about what the split down the middle is. But there's an awful lot to enjoy in I Know What You Did Last Summer. There are a couple of things that do work for me, which we'll talk about, but there's a little bit too talky in places, which the sequel dispenses for too much talk and gets into the kind of slasher movie thrills and spills. But when I Know What You Did Last Summer works, it works really, really well. And it's got a couple of great chase sequences. It looks great. The soundtrack works. It's very dated, but it works well. The four main leads are all pretty engaging in fairly kind of thinly written parts. And Jennifer Love Hewitt, I think, is a pretty good final girl. I know she's got her knockers, but I think she's pretty good. I'd be interested to hear what everyone else thinks. So, Joseph, are you a fan of I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Yeah, I am. Honestly, I had not seen this since it came out of the cinema. I'd seen the sequel, a few times, because like you, I do prefer the sequel over this film. But anyway, I watched this the other night, and the opening shot with the flyover of the ocean and Typo Negative's doing that cover of Summer Breeze, I just think that's one of the best opening shots to any, slasher film. It's just so beautiful. And then they zoom right in on that kid who's sitting on the rocks. It's just a great opening shot. And the whole film is, well photographed like that. I mean, they continue on, with that same type of atmosphere, and it really works. One thing I don't agree with you, though, is the quote unquote engaging characters, they are thinly written, but I didn't really recall this because it's been so long since I've seen the movie. But I found the acting from all four involved to be very, very bottom of the barrel in places, especially the two guys, Ryan Phillippe and Freddie Prinze Jr. I think Sarah Michelle Gellar, does what she can, but those two guys and Jennifer Love Hewitt in a lot of places, I just thought the acting was phenomenally laughable. The moment when Jennifer Love Hewitt just throws her arms up and starts spinning around, what are you waiting for? I was just chuckling. And every time Freddie Prinze Jr., every time he was just standing there, I just couldn't stop laughing because he couldn't emote. He couldn't speak without, seems like he just walked right out of his first acting class. I guess that's the best I could say. But you don't really watch these films for, top caliber acting. So, it was laughable, but at the same time, you get past that. I will give this film, a lot of, points for that great cinematography and a lot of great chase scenes. I especially love the one with Bridget Wilson in the shop. where the killer, spoiler, gets to, is it Helen? Is it Sarah Michelle Gellar Helen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it's her sister and, she's getting stalked in that store. That's a really well shot scene. Really well done. One thing it doesn't really bug me in the sequel because, you know, by then he's already established, but, and this is more spoilers, but the reveal of who the killer is, I don't know. I just, the film sets it up as a whodunit, but you don't really meet this Ben Willis guy until the very end. And that's not a knock against Muse Watson, who I think is a pretty good actor. But I don't know. I just always found it kind of be a bit of a cheat because, you know, they're hiding his face, hiding the identity. But then when they reveal him, you're like, okay, that's it is the guy they ran over. It's not really much of a mystery, and if you don't really even know who the guy is, I mean, you hear his name like once right before he's revealed, because the whole time they think it's this, you know, this Billy Egan kid or David Egan kid, and then later when they find out that someone named Billy Blue had gone to scene that Anne Heche's character, you think it might be this person. And then they say, oh, it turns out it could be Ben Willis. And then they reveal who Ben Willis is. Excuse me. I don't know. I just kind of found it lazy. But, you know, those are just minor gripes. It's well shot. It's really fast paced. Yeah, I guess all I can say is, you know, thumbs up. It's not perfect. But, you know, for a late 90s slasher, it's pretty good.
OK, well, thank you, Joseph. Nathan, how about you?
Well, I guess I kind of have to disagree with Joseph about the acting. I thought they all did really well, except for, yeah, and I admit, the scene where she's spinning around saying, what are you waiting for? Yeah, that's really cheesy, but, I mean, how can you really act that scene well? I mean, that's just an unbelievably cheesy scene.
Some regardless. Of the dialogue, I don't think, did them any favors, like at the end when Freddie Prinze Jr. is like, you're the only one who gets to me. She's like, I understand your pain. It's just terrible dialogue.
So, I mean, I'd probably have to, like, give the gripe to the writer, you know, for giving them some bad dialogue. But no, I mean, I'm a huge fan of this one. Of course, Justin, obviously you're not alone because I love the sequel more, even though I do love the first one. Helen's chase scene is just phenomenal. I think it's one of the best, like, modern, well, semi-modern, I guess, slasher chase scenes, you know, that I've seen. It's really well done. It's very suspenseful. I think the killer is really scary in these movies. He's very imposing. The hook is a really good weapon, and I think it'd be very painful. I thought that Barry had some anger management issues. he seems to get mad at everybody over anything. So yeah, he's. I think he's got some issues. Plus, he's one of these that just thinks he knows who's doing it and just goes and attacks people when he has no proof over who it is. Mm. I wasn't a big fan of the final battle in this movie. I have to admit, the all the scenes on the boat at the end, I don't know. I really lost interest, and I felt like they didn't really give Jennifer Love Hewitt much to do. I thought Freddie Prinze Jr. pretty much was more of a final boy than she was a final girl at the end. I mean, thankfully in the sequel, it's not the case. I mean, she's given much more to do in the sequel, but in this one, I don't know. I just felt like she didn't really do much at the end. It was just, you know, I guess I expected more from the final battle with her character, but no, I mean, I think it's a really good movie, and, you know, I'm definitely a fan. So, you know, thumbs up from me.
Cool. Well, thank you, Nathan. What about you, Eric?
Yeah, well, that's a big thumbs up from me as well. I think this film is vastly superior to Scream. Scream is a film and, you know, indeed a series of films that I would class as merely being okay. I found them fun to watch once, but I can't watch, they don't stand up to repeated viewing for me. Whereas I Know What You Did Last Summer and its sequel I can watch over and over again. What I like about it, and again, I would have to disagree with Joseph and agree with Nathan, I think the acting is top notch in this. particularly the two girls. There is something Keanu Reevesy about Freddie Prinze Jr., and Ryan Phillippe possibly could have toned down the obnoxiousness, but maybe that's the fault of the director.
I got a letter.
But I know, I think it's the characters are sympathetic. I think their reaction to, you know, it's not often that characters in these films have guilt feelings about things. And so it was refreshing to see that they're all kind of suffering after this hit and run accident they've been responsible for. Yeah, one thing I will agree with you, the Jennifer Love Hewitt spinning around going, what are you waiting for, is really, really, really cringy. Again, I don't think it's her fault. I think it was a scene basically filmed because it might look good in the trailer. But certainly it sticks out like a sore thumb as being, you know, really, really bad in the film. And it's kind of repeated in the second one as well. I find it odd that Ben Willis went around killing all these secondary characters. Like somebody like Johnny Galecki's character of Max, who it would be an arch enemy of Ryan Phillippe's character. So you'd think he would be a ally of Ben Willis, but no, he gets killed. And poor old Elsa as well. And, you know, he seems to kill all these sideline characters and leave the ones he's really after till the very end, when he only manages to get two of them then. You know, as I was saying, that it's the fact that the characters for me are sympathetic, particularly somebody like Sarah Michelle Gellar. Her character is one that it's one of those characters you didn't want to see die. I mean, I know we've discussed this in the past. I don't know if her name came up, but in this film, I certainly didn't want the character of Helen to die. I found her very sympathetic, even though she starts out as a bit of an airhead. So, you know, that's what makes the film stand out for me, and certainly above Scream. In Scream, I didn't care about any of the characters. I found them all kind of obnoxious. And I also like the fact that Kevin Williamson's dialogue is less synthetic. I'm not sure what the word is I'm looking for, but in Scream, it feels very unrealistic, where it's slightly more realistic in I Know What You Did Last Summer, which makes it less grating on me. Although, you know, there are moments. I mean, there's Dawson's Beach, which gets referred to all the time, which is a stupid little in-joke to that dreadful TV series. Yeah, thumbs up for me for I Know What You Did Last Summer. Do I like it as much as the sequel? You'll have to wait and see in the next 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
In the next 5 minutes.
Next 5 minutes. The thing that irked me about this film and the sequel, although I just kind of take it in good humour, I'm going to guess, is the over reliance on the bait and switch. Well, not a bait and switch. What I'm looking for, but basically, like the scene with the crabs and the dead body in the boot. That within seconds,
I was going to mention that actually,
is cleared out and gone, and they do the same thing repeatedly throughout the film and in the sequel. And in the sequel, there's a scene where there's a dead body in a closet, and it's gone, and there's no blood or anything there, and it's just the things that wouldn't actually be possible. So to do it once, you think, well, you can forgive it, but to keep on doing that, and they do it a number of times. It's like when the character Barry gets murdered in that great scene where Helen is reprising her role as the outgoing queen.
And that girl is singing Fame on stage in the most fantastic manner.
Yes. And when he's killed with a hook and dragged away. And then when they go up, the police are shining, you know, flashlights around, and they don't spot any blood, even though there is blood dripping. It closes in on a bit of blood dripping off a banister. Things like that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they don't amount to much. But the crabs and the dead body in the boot would have taken a day of cleaning to get looking like it did when they go back 2 seconds later.
It's like the car when he cleans out all the crabs. I mean, even if he were somehow able to, you know, get all the crabs and the body out of there, wouldn't they smell that at least, the after smell?
Yeah.
What I found bizarre, and now I've completely forgotten what I was going to say, because I was about to jump in when Joseph spoke, and now I've forgotten. Okay, talk amongst yourselves for a second, and I'll grab my thought again.
I was going to say that I agree with Eric about Helen being extremely sympathetic, because, I mean, she's kind of a sad character. You know, she's got all these big dreams at the beginning that she's going to go be this great actress, and then she just ends up working at the furniture store because, you know, I mean, she just didn't make it, so she had to come back home. And I'm like, I wonder how many times that's really happened to people. Probably
it's
a lot.
It's not even a furniture store. It's a furniture store that sells, like, perfume and it sells fashion and...
Because there's that great scene where there's the mannequins all covered in plastic.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
Okay, I've found my thought again.
Yeah.
And it is, I love the way that they have this pact of secrecy, and yet whenever they're together, they don't just talk about it, they shout it. And they shout it when there's people walking behind them and there's a door open.
Yeah.
Do you think Barry kind of manhandled Julie when he wanted her to, you know, take this to their grave?
That's another thing. It's like, what? It's in all these slasher movies, there's always one obnoxious character, and you're thinking, why do they hang around with them? Why is Sarah Michelle Gellar going out with this absolute knob end, and why is Julie allowing herself to hang around with them?
I think it was a curious mix, wasn't it? Because the Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character was the one poor kid, wasn't he? The rest was supposed to be kind of rich.
I don't know if Julie was meant to be rich, was she?
Well, he said.
Well, she has a laptop.
Well, he said, didn't he, that you've all got your families can spend their way out of this, but I'm, you know, when they knock over, you know, they have the accident.
True.
I thought it was interesting, Sarah Michelle's character, because she'd started Buffy the Vampire Slayer the year before this came out, and that whole thing was about her playing. In Buffy playing, I mean, I wasn't a great fan of Buffy, but it was the idea of her playing an airhead cheerleader who happens to be, you know, kicking vampires' ass all the way through. So turning that cliche on its head, whereas in I Know What You Did Last Summer, she does play the cliche, doesn't she? She plays the blonde airhead, you know, who gets killed, you know, halfway through. So
yeah, she has a bit more depth, though, I think, than that.
No, she does, but it was interesting juxtaposition between her role and Buffy and doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, that she was playing exactly the kind of role that Buffy was the antithesis of. You know, it was kind of it still works really well. And I think I agree. I think she's pretty good in this. And I think it's, you know, there's a sadness to her character, isn't there, which, you know, makes her more sympathetic than perhaps some of the other characters, you know, in the film.
I'd say she's easily the, you know, the most identifiable of the four, and she's probably the, you know, the best actor of the four. Mm. If you're in my honest opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The way talking about being in Germany, but there's a German word, I think it's Schadenfreude, which is taking pleasure in other people's misfortune. And at the beginning of the film, they're gleefully recounting the tale of the hook-handed killer, aren't they? And talking about, no, he was gutted, no, she was decapitated, and really taking pleasure in the kind of gory details of how these fictional characters or these kind of urban legend, how they died, but then they actually become part of the urban legend themselves, which obviously it was the whole point, not whole point, but that was the idea behind the film, I kind of guess. But I wonder if Ben Willis was actually listening to them on the beach and he heard the story, and that's why he, you know, because there's no other real reason why he had a hook, was there?
No, yeah. Unless it was just a well-known urban legend around Southport, and that's why why he just chose that.
They use the hook in the fishing shops to, you know, pull out the ice blocks. So, and he was a fisherman, so I don't know. Maybe it's just a great coincidence or something, I don't know.
Mm. But interesting, just talking about the Johnny Galecki, who was obviously best known now for like the Big Bang Theory, although he's been in lots of things for, you know, a number of years. But I did read, you know, just ahead of background, but I did read that his murder was shot later because they didn't feel, when they watched the film, they didn't feel that there was enough of a presence of threat from the killer, because they're so good at keeping in the shadows that they needed the audience to realise that their main four characters were actually under in mortal danger rather than just being stalked by this kind of figure. So they brought in the murder of the Johnny Galecki's character to actually show that the threat to the four main characters was real.
That would kind of make sense, you know, that they filmed it afterwards, because I kind of felt like Eric did. I just wondered, like, why did Ben Willis kill him?
Mm-hmm.
I never understood it, but I guess it kind of makes more sense now.
Yeah. I mean, any other thoughts about the film? Do you agree that the film was perhaps more influential than Scream?
Possibly, yeah. Well,
I'd say a lot of the slasher films, you know, that followed Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer, they weren't as, you know, nudge, nudge, jokey. So, that's what this film is. It's not as nudge, nudge, jokey. So I'd say, yeah, it probably did the more influential. It's more influential than Scream because maybe I guess a lot of people didn't want to just go all the whole joke route because they didn't really want to, you know, say, hey, look, we're being a blatant copy of Scream. Let's just, you know, do a straightforward slasher like I Know What You Did Last Summer. So, yeah.
Because it was like a crossroads, wasn't it? Because it went off either toward the Scary Movie territory, which, of course, was the original title for Scream and became like airplane-style humour, like very broad humour. Or went off towards Urban Legend and Valentine, that type of thing, which again was kind of knowing, but was kept a straight face, which is what I Know What You Did Last Summer. If there wasn't I Know What You Did Last Summer, then perhaps the slasher movie would have just gone straight into Scary Movie territory, and we wouldn't, you know, which would have been a shame.
Yes.
But just talking about the influence, I did some digging just to have a little look to see what kind of oops.
Just, who was that? Stripes.
I had to stop her. She was trying to jump on my phone.
Bless her. But I was looking to see the kind of the influence that this film had, and I mean, we've spoken about it before, but it was broadly remade in South Korea in 2001 as The Record. Has anyone of any of you seen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Seen that, yeah.
Yeah, which is quite a fun little movie, isn't it? But that's a blatant kind of sort of rip-off. But they also did, there was Cooch to High, which is the Bollywood movie, which lifts lots of scenes from this. But the whole general thing is is from I Know What You Did Last Summer. But I also found some other like parodies online. I mean, perhaps the best known one is the Simpsons one, isn't it?
Flanders, yeah.
Yeah. I've got a little clip here if you'd like to hear that, just to see if you can. Yeah, here we go.
Oh no!
Ned Flanders!
He's dead! He's definitely dead!
Oh my god! We killed Ned Flanders!
You mean you killed Ned Flanders?
Oh, it was an accident!
We've got to go to the police.
Well, they'll never believe a Simpson killed a Flanders by accident.
Even I have my doubts.
Don't worry, I got a plan. Okay, Ned, first thing we have to do is to make sure that no one knows that you're dead. And if anyone asks, you just say that you are not dead.
So, there's another short clip here, which you played before, but I think it's worth repeating.
Okay, Marge, you hide in the abandoned amusement park. Lisa, the pet cemetery. Bart, spooky roller disco. And I'll go skinny dipping in that lake where the sexy teens were killed 100 years ago tonight. Now, Flanders, I want you to...
Brilliant.
Yeah. Which is funny. There's I've got another short clip, and you'll never... I don't know if you've... Unless you come across this, but you'll never guess ahead of time where this is from.
Of his dreamy apps? Of taking Jade's butt virginity.
Who the f*** is driving right now?
No idea.
Sasha!
Ah! OMFG, guys, we killed somebody's grandma.
I think it's Barbie.
The brats killed Barbie?
And not just with market share this time. Hey-o!
True that.
Good one.
We gotta hide the body, you guys.
Welcome to your new dream house.
Rest in peace, bitch.
See ya.
Yes, I must admit, I didn't expect to find a Bratz Dolls parody of I Know What You Did Last Summer.
That robot chicken, isn't it?
Is it? Okay.
Is that what that is? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's Barbie in the thing comes back dressed in pink and kills them one by one by injecting filler and various things into them. So, but yeah, it's just kind of, you don't get, if you look for like Scream parodies, there are them, but not in the way that the kind of pop culture thing like The Simpsons and say Robot Chicken and things like that, that it entered the entered the consciousness in the same kind of way. I kind of guess because Scream was a parody already, wasn't it? So it was easier to parody, not as easy to parody a parody, is it? But yeah, that was kind of, it was... I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know if you've come across any other any other parodies or ripoffs?
Well, there are a few pornos. I know who you did last summer, and I know who you blew last summer. There was a recent stage musical in LA, I think it was called I Totally Know What You Did Last Donna Summer. I think it was gay themed. And there was, of course, that movie from 2000 called Shriek, If You Know What I Did Last Friday the 13th, which starred Tiffany Amber Thiessen from Beverly Hills 90210. I've never seen it, but reviews all indicate that it's rather appalling.
I liked it.
Oh, did you? There's a cricket themed one, which I think is must be a UK made slasher called I Know How Many Runs You Scored Last Summer. Have you seen that one, Justin?
I think I've heard of it. Is that Australian one?
Oh, is it Australian? Maybe it's Australian, yeah.
I've seen it.
Oh, if Alan Dale is in it.
He is not, sadly.
Well,
it's actually okay. I mean, it's not fantastic, but it was like a decent time waster. But it was one of those things where I felt the comedy, they tried too hard to be funny.
Well,
although there is a scene where he makes a guy put on a jock strap that has nails in it, and then he kicks the guy in the groin.
So that's maybe one for later. But as we're kind of coming into background territory, who's got any background? Nathan, let's start with you.
Only background that I have is I used to have a poster for this movie hanging in my bedroom, and Jennifer Love's huge cleavage was probably about 50% of that poster.
Well, even more so in the sequel poster, wasn't it?
Yeah, bigger than the killer on that poster.
Yeah,
I hate those posters from that era. Yeah. I hate them. They're so bland. Mm.
They are.
But, well, thank you. Thank you, Nathan. Joseph, how about you?
Yeah, the only thing I have is what's interesting is Jennifer Love Hewitt's playing this kind of, you know, I guess you'd call her a quote-unquote, like, you know, girl next door or good girl. But apparently she's some kind of, like, you know, freak in real life, like sex freak. She's into vajazzling, if you've heard of that. It's where you get rhinestones, like, attached to your pubic region. It looks like pubic hair, but it's all rhinestones. And I'm not sure how true this is, but somebody she dated went on a talk show and said that, you know, she had to kind of seek help for sexual addiction, which is kind of, you know, contrasty to her character, but what can you do? That's about the only thing I have.
Well, let's just say all allegedly.
Yes, allegedly.
In case Jennifer Love Hewitt's vajazzling lawyers listening.
Well, actually, she admitted the vajazzling herself, but the whole sexual addiction thing, I think that, you know, that's just alleged.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. That's some background for you. It's, yes. Well, thank you, Joseph, for that
scurrilous gossip.
Yeah. Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, the script was apparently written before Scream by Kevin Williamson, adapted from a teen novel by Lois Duncan, which was published in 1973, which has the same character names and the same setup and premise, but had no slasher element to it. In fact, nobody in the novel gets killed, being a teen novel. And apparently she's really, really unhappy that you know, Jim Gillespie, Kevin Williamson, turned it into this slasher movie. And she didn't like the fact that it was an R-rated, you know, not a gore-a-thon, but it's gory in places. Other novels of hers that were adapted into films included Wes Craven's Summer of Fear, you know the made-for-TV Linda Blair movie from 1978, and the wonderful Hotel for Dogs. That was also a Lois Duncan novel. It was directed by a Scotsman called Jim Gillespie, who hasn't really gone on to do much. He impressed before this with a short film called Joyride, which was on the American DVD, and it's a pretty decent little 10-minute short. He went on to make Detox, starring Sylvester Stallone, which is also called, is it ICU, is it?
Yeah, ICU. Yeah.
And another sort of semi-slashery movie called Venom, but I mean, he hasn't really done anything in the last 10 years or so. Bridget Wilson, who plays Elsa, is now Bridget Wilson Sampras, because she married former tennis star and millionaire Pete Sampras. I wonder why. Johnny Galecki plays Max, as you said. He was famous at this time in his career for being in Roseanne. He played, the Noodlehead daughter's boyfriend, I think.
Darlene's boyfriend, David.
That's it. Yeah. It was filmed from March to June of 1997 on a budget of about $17 million. It opened the same day as Devil's Advocate in the UK, in the US, and beat it to the number one spot, and actually stayed number one for 3 weeks, which is quite unprecedented. Well, maybe not in those days, but now it would be for a slasher movie, certainly if not a horror film. The original trailer for the movie and the advertising said it was from the creator of Scream, and Miramax sued Columbia, so they had to remove all references to that from advertising. The one last thing, and this will make you all laugh. Rob Zombie listed it as one of his top five least favorite horror movies in an article at revolvermag.com. He said, once again, dopey teen actors being menaced by what? The Morton's Fisherman guy? That's not a horror movie. That's barely a Nancy Drew mystery. Jennifer Love Hewitt would have to be riding on a pony stark naked to make this worthwhile. So people in glass houses, Rob.
Dear, oh, dear.
Oh my God.
What a douchebag.
I want to know what his other four were.
Well, I'll tell you what they were. The Mummy Returns, the 2001 sequel to The Mummy. The Psycho remake by Gus Van Sant. Scream 2 and Dracula 2000 were his five least favorite horror films. And the comments on that webpage are pretty interesting. Most people are siding with the makers of the five films and saying that Rob Zombie is a douchebag, as he said. But, I mean, there are worse films out there than even if you don't like Scream 2 or The Mummy Returns or I Know What You Did Last Summer, there are still worse films out there. And I point you to
Halloween 2,
yes.
Devil's
Rejects, House of Thousand Corpses,
Salem's Witches, or whatever that Salem movie was he did.
But I think Rob Zombie should go back to our last episode and have a look at that double bill and then come back to us and tell us that I Know What You Did Last Summer is still one of the worst movies ever. That's all I have, Justin. Over to you.
Okay, excellent. Well, just a couple of things to add to that. There was Lois Duncan, she said, didn't like the film, but apparently her daughter was murdered or died aged 18 in 1989, and apparently that was one of the reasons she didn't like the direction the film went. But I'm sure she got paid lots of money for it, so...
Yeah, I'm sure her new luxury villa in the Malibu sort of eased her pain.
I'm sure, yes. But there's also, as we trailered a little bit before, there's going to be a remake happening next year, I believe. Mm-hmm. Where has it got? It's in here somewhere, and I've now lost. Here we go. It said on September the 14th, 2014, Sony reported they have plans to remake the movie with Mike Flanagan and Jeff Howard currently writing a script. Sony also states that the movie is high priority and is set for 2016 release. Obviously, the original film was released by Columbia, which I believe now is probably a Sony company, isn't it? But Columbia, obviously, back in the heyday of the slasher movie, Happy Birthday to Me was a Columbia release. A couple of things. I've actually picked up, I think when I was working at the cinema, I picked up, I don't know where I got it from actually, but I got the publicity information production notes from the Entertainment Film Distributors release of the film in the UK. And there was an interview with some of the cast, which I'll just read a couple of little clips from. And we know how reliable these things are. I mean, quite often they're not even actually said by the actors or actresses themselves. But Love Hewitt said, doing a scary psychological thriller was a tremendous challenge. I'm one of the biggest scaredy cats ever, and I can't go see movies like this because they scare me too badly. But that intrigued me and made me decide to do the film, because not only was I getting to play a great character and work with terrific people, but I was going to get over one of my biggest fears by facing it head on. Everything Julie learns in the movie, I learned with her. She sort of gets over a fright and grows strength, as so do I. Sarah Michelle Gellar said, I love the script. When you're a young actress, it's very rare to find characters our age that are this fully developed. These are four really strong, intelligent characters that go through transitions that are really human. And for me, the character of Helen was a real departure, and it was something I really wanted to do. Interestingly, Freddie Prinze Jr. plays Ray. He said, when I was in fourth grade in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I read a book by Lois Duncan called I Know What You Did Last Summer. I read this book and was terrified for a month and didn't want to sleep or anything. And then suddenly, 10 years later, I opened a script and the title in big, huge, frightening letters said, I Know What You Did Last Summer. I had the biggest flashback, and after I read Kevin's terrific script, I really wanted to do it. Interestingly, just a couple of things before we get onto the sequel is obviously contractually, I imagine that Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jennifer Love Hewitt are locked into the sequel. From all reports I've read, is Freddie Prinze Jr. really hated, really didn't want to do the sequel, and did pretty much anything he could do to get a way out of it. And we could talk a little bit more about that. But the last thing I wanted to mention was the scene with Helen in the cop car when she's in the back, and the cop gets out and gets killed by Ben Willis. Was that scene was meant to be more extravagant? Because you remember the scene, I think it's in Scream 2, where the cop car crashes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
they have to clamber out. That was actually written originally for I Know What You Did Last Summer, and it was meant to be in there. But apparently Jim Gillespie couldn't manage the scene, legend has it, or just didn't work. So they didn't do it in that, but they Kevin Williamson recycled that scene, which was a great, couple of scenes in Scream 2. But as I say, it was meant to be in the first one we did last summer. But that was... Have we got anything else to say about the film before we move into the sequel?
Well, I think before we get on to the sequel, Eric should get his joke of the weekend.
Oh.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, here we go.
It's my joke of the weekend, so fantastic!
Did you hear about the Hollywood actress who got rabies and had to be put down? She was Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
You keep trying, and that's appreciated. It was quite a good one, actually. I even heard Joseph yelp in the background.
Oh, so. I actually thought that was funny. Good job, Eric.
Thank
good
you. Job, Thank Eric. You very much.
Yes. Okay, well, it's time to move on to the second feature on our double bill, and that is where we go off island hopping. Well, not island hopping, but for a big slab of cheese in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. And here is the trailer for that movie.
Mark of the morning for Magic 96.7 Radio.
Oh, my God. Oh, yes.
Just one magic.
Yes.
Wait, quickie, get away.
Yes.
After what happened last summer,
we are going to the Bahamas.
Nobody deserves a vacation more than Julie James.
We have arrived in paradise.
And here, miles from civilization.
So a great weekend.
Yeah, to a great weekend for
she's
me.
Finally gotten away from it all.
I should have changed that stupid lock. I should have made Julie the key. If I'd have known for just 1 second, you'd be back to bother me.
Don't have a lyric. Hold on.
Did something to the screen. I said,
what are you talking about?
But she can never escape her past.
It's happening again.
What?
Because there are some secrets.
There was a body in there.
Oh.
I am not going crazy. He's here.
Oh, who is here?
And there are some fears.
Hey, Julie, you see any dead bodies out there?
2 summers ago, we hit Ben Willis with our car, and then we threw his body in the water.
Can you not tell me the whole story? I'm your best friend.
That will haunt her forever.
I want off this island.
That's not possible.
This time...
We're all gonna die!
I still know what you did last summer. Get hooked again.
Ever since killing the fisherman 1 year ago, Julie James is still haunted by images of him after her. Causes her relationship with Ray Bronson to suffer further. When her best friend Carla Wilson wins 3 tickets to the Bahamas, Julie finds a perfect opportunity to finally relax. But someone is waiting for her. Someone she thought was dead. Someone who's out again for revenge. That's a short synopsis from IMDb for I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. The film that followed immediately on came out the year after the first film. I was going to read out, we talked about this before the show, but I was going to read out the synopsis on the back of the US DVD, which came out actually in 1998 or 1999. which didn't actually make a lot of sense, but then Joseph pointed out it did, and I'll read that very quickly. It just says, remember Ben Willis, he's the fisherman who killed the boy who was driving the car when it went off the road in the fatal accident that killed his daughter Sarah. He's a man in the slicker with a hook in his hand ready to exact bloody justice. Well, he's back. It's hard to forget a man who refuses to die. I was a bit confused by that, but then Joseph, you pointed out, didn't you, that Sarah, did she ever get mentioned in the first movie?
Yeah, because they're doing the research on David Egan. It's like in those microfiche things. It's like boy kills girl, daughter of fisherman, or something like that.
So, just so I'm clear in this, the chronological order of this. So, in the beginning of the first film, Ben Willis it kills Ben Egan.
David Egan.
And then while he's walking back along the road, he gets hit by the car.
Yes. That's correct, yes.
That's right, okay. Right, well, yes, so this is a year later, and Judy James is thinks she's killed Ben Willis, and she's got a life back on track, but it all goes wrong. But this is the delightfully cheesy and much misunderstood sequel to I Know What You Did Last Summer. I prefer this film because it's very silly. All the criticisms that are levelled at it are probably warranted, in so much it's obviously was put together very, very quickly. It's a bit of a mishmash. It's full of cliches, but it's also got like a knowing sense of humour about it, without again descending into or trying to ape Scream. So I think when I wrote the review of this, the idea of having the killer telling Julie James he's back by the medium of karaoke was, you know, delightfully silly, and you know it just showed tongue planted firmly in cheek, knowing it was a fun slasher movie made with straight faces, and that's why it works for me so well, and actually is, I think, a more entertaining film overall than the original film. It certainly has a more of a Scooby-Doo early 80s slasher feel to it, and I think that's whereas I think some of the post-Scream slashers, or a Scream in itself, and some of them are so focused on being hip and being edgy to some degree that they sometimes forget actually what made the early 80s slashers tick so well. And Urban Legends is another film that got very much criticised, but did that very, very well. The kind of more of the cartoony, popcorny slasher movies like your Friday 13th Part 2s, your Happy Birthday to Me, your Terror Trains, those kind of films, which I know they are ridiculous, but they revel in that and they make them work despite or because of that. And that's what I think I Still Know What You Did Last Summer work does really, really well. Plus, it probably has one of the best extended chase sequences in any slasher movie, you know, hands down, regardless whether or not it's from the golden era or not. Although there's some bits of it, as you know, the older it gets, the creakier it gets in some ways. When it works as a straight ahead slasher movie, and the last half an hour is just sustained screaming and fun and red herrings and, you know, silliness, and it's just effortlessly entertaining. So I'd be curious to know, let's start with Eric this time, because Eric said he keep playing your cards very close to your chest. So yes. What are your thoughts?
I watch these films back to back. Now, it's unusual for me to watch two films back to back because my attention span is quite limited, living as we are in the internet age. But the time flew by. I mean, both films are about 100 minutes, and the 3 hour 20 minutes just flew by for me. The sequel, I think, is brilliant. For me, it's probably on a par with the original. It doesn't veer too far off the path laid down in the original, except it amps up the silliness, as you were saying. And it's so silly that the only film that matches it for stupidity is, as you said, Urban Legend. And that's the reason why I love those two films. It was released within a year of the original, and you can tell the script was thrown together quite quickly, because there are just so many deliciously ludicrous moments in there that surely somebody would have ironed out if they'd, you know, had more time to spend on the script. I mean, I'm thinking about, at the start, Brandy goes snooping around in Julie James' wardrobe for one of the opening false scares. Yeah. You know, she creeps into her bedroom, knowing that she's had this traumatic experience almost exactly 1 year to the day. She goes in sneaking around her bedroom looking for a black skirt. There's the karaoke scene, as you say, which is wonderfully cheesy, especially the fact that everyone else in the bar looks away just as those words come up on the screen. And the whole whole setup of sending the kids on a plane to this tropical island as part of a phony prize, it outdoes even the most ludicrous Bond villain schemes. And also it relies a lot on chance. I mean, what if Brandy hadn't invited Julie along as one of the prize winners? Or what if Julie just didn't want to go? What would Ben Willis have done then? There's a great scene in it, and this used to always make me laugh when myself and my friend went to see it originally in the cinema, was there's a scene where Brandy finds a dead maid in a dryer, and she stands there screaming and staring at the scene and screaming, and then it cuts to some other scenes involving other characters as they go around their business, and then it cuts back about 2 minutes later to Brandy, and she's still staring into the dryer screaming. And I think the idea is to insinuate that all the events are happening concurrently, but the way it's edited it makes it look like Brandy has basically been standing beside a dryer screaming for about 2 minutes. Or like, you know, she's performing a Susie and the Banshees single, maybe, which is, you know, 2 minutes of screaming as well, isn't it?
Oh, Eric.
Oh, how dare I?
How dare you indeed.
And, you know, why would Julie James, you know, she's suspicious there's a killer going around. Why would she step into a sunbed, put on goggles so she can't see, and put on her Walkman so she can't hear? Mm. I mean, again, these things probably somebody would have said, hang on a second, had they had more time. I'm glad they didn't have more time, because these are what make the film stand out for me, is these bits of silliness. In hindsight, the killer's identity is kind of obvious. I'm pretty sure I didn't guess when I saw it the first time. But looking back now, you can sort of tell quite easily. If there's one thing I don't like in the film, it's Jack Black. I think he's ghastly in this film, and I cringe every time he comes on the screen and does his hilarious, in inverted commas, over-the-top stoner routine. You know, fortunately, he doesn't get that much screen time, and he gets quite a violent death at the end of the film, too. But overall, as you say, the sheer silliness of the film is what makes it utterly brilliant. For me, on a par with the original, because I do love the original quite a lot. Yes, but big thumbs up for both movies.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Eric. Nathan, what are your thoughts?
It is indeed very brilliant. I mean, like you both have already said, it's very silly. It's very over the top. I mean, I always laugh at the karaoke. I still know. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's just so ridiculous.
Can we be sure? Maybe there are actually the words to I Will Survive.
Well, I know what you did last summer.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, I still know what you did last summer, I think, is in the third verse. So I think there was nothing wrong with the karaoke machine.
But I thought that Julie, she was a lot tougher in this one. You know, she, you know, I felt that she had grown a lot since, you know, the horror that happened to her the previous summer. And I mean, spoiler alert, but Will Benson, really? I thought that was hysterical. Why would he pick like such an obvious name too? You know, like, I mean, like you guys have said, a lot of this plan relies all on chance, and then he decides to give the name Will Benson as kind of a wink. You know, here, Julia, here, gotcha. But yeah, I agree with you about Jack Black. I mean, he's very annoying in this film, so I was very happy to see him die. And I also agree about the chase scene. I mean, you've got three like people getting chased, and I thought that was awesome. Like the three of them trying to get away and, you know, being attacked by the killer. I thought that was a lot of fun. And Brandy is pretty tough because she goes through a lot and survives. Mm. You know, I mean, she falls through like that glass of the greenhouse. And in other movies, that would have killed somebody.
She falls through the floor, the attic as well, which makes me wonder if she has weight issues.
I thought it's funny, just as an interjection, that Julie James, that's my room, and they're looking down, and there's a mirrored ceiling above her bed.
Yeah.
And she didn't... She didn't sort of think that was a bit odd, kinky.
Yeah, that's true too. I didn't really even think about that part, but yeah. But no, I mean, this follows my favorite formula for a slasher movie. Whereas the first one, you know, they just get attacked, you know, in the town itself. But this, they're in a much more secluded location, and that's my favorite. You know. I guess my favorite theme for a slasher movie is a group in a secluded location where there's no escape. Whereas, you know, in part one, I mean, they're in a town. So, I mean, there's always escape. But I like the idea of a more secluded location and people getting picked off one at a time. I love movies that do that. So, I mean, that one definitely elevated this one above the first one for me, even though, like I said, I love the first one. But I still know, I mean, it's just so cheesy and ridiculous and fun. I mean, it's, you know, I agree with Eric. I mean, the time just flew by watching these movies, and I didn't get distracted at all, you know. So, you know, they're really, really entertaining, I have to say.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Nathan. What about you, Joseph?
I think I've said this before, but, you know, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer for me is the Friday the 13th Part 5, a new beginning of the postmodern horror slasher films. I really love this film. I think it's a lot better than the first one because, like you said, the first one gets a little talky and this one just kind of cuts the fat and just gets down to the whole action stuff. I mean, it's completely ludicrous, too. I mean, Ben Willis, he has enough money to send his kid to college despite the fact that, you know, he's on the run from the law because they never found his body. So he probably doesn't have enough time to go out fishing and making a living. And then there's that one point at the very beginning where he kills Ray's friend and the police are like, he was driving a BMW, which is like this high class car, which is very expensive. You know, the whole movie is just ludicrous like that, just complete stupidity all around, like the six shooter that fires 8 or 9 bullets at the end. And it's just ridiculous. The one thing, you know, that I can say, you know, not comic wise is, it carries on, you know, some of the, great cinematography as the first one. Here, you know, I think Nathan certainly knows this. Any slasher movie that just relies heavily on rain, I tend to like a lot. And this movie, you know, it's like a torrential downpour the whole way. And I love that. I just love, you know, chase scenes in the rain. I love, you know, being trapped in this like isolated little location with a rain just pouring down outside. It just gives that film, you know, just this whole, you know, here tropical, I guess, atmosphere would be it. I think the characters are maybe not as fleshed out, but maybe a little more likable this time around. They don't really have the asshole. I think the closest they come is probably the night manager played by Jeffrey Combs, but his part's so minor, it's not, you know, not as grating, say, as Barry was in the original. I liked everybody in this film, actually. Except Jack Black, as you three have said. I think he's totally annoying. And actually, I don't even think he's credited at the end credits. So I don't know if that's his doing or if they're just like, wow, I can't believe we hired him on. But
I was wondering that as well, why he's uncredited.
Yeah. It's odd,
isn't it? The part is big enough, certainly, to justify being towards the top of the IMDb list. So
But I mean, this film is just, you know, turn your brain off. Get a big tub of popcorn and a soda and just have a lot of fun. It's one of the better, you know, I guess you'd call it recent slashers. I mean, it's, you know, it's like, how old is it now? Like 17 years?
17 years.
Yeah. I guess you'd still call it semi-recent. It's one of my favorites because it's just so, it's so mindless, but it's so entertaining. There's not one boring moment in the film. You know, even I can give it a plus to, you know, Freddie Prinze Jr. I think his acting has improved a lot in this one. I don't know. It's just a lot of fun. I give this one thumbs way, way up. It's a movie I could watch just over and over and over again.
I always thought it's curious because I mentioned about the Freddie Prinze Jr. was, I think I remember reading something and making some kind of sarcastic remark about being in the film about, you know, along the lines of, you know, yeah, you're very astute and you're thinking that I wouldn't have done it unless I was contractually obliged to. But I wondered why the whole thing was done like it was, with him being filmed completely separate for the rest of the characters for most of the film.
Well, you notice that. I mean, he's got, like, you know, minimal screen time. That's probably why, you know, he probably, you know, raised a fuss like, hey, if you can cut my part down. Mm-hmm. So they decided, you know, just to bring in this kind of new guy to kind of fill his shoes, but still have him kind of in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're thinking if they're going to pay for him to be in the film, they would have had him in there the whole way around. But yeah, so there's obviously some kind of story behind that. But I loved Jeffrey Combs is kind of his character is really fun in it, isn't it? I think he's mm-hmm. kind of waspish. And also that whole pointless thing with the whole voodoo thing doesn't go anywhere, does it?
No,
it's just a big red herring. So
yeah, Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the way the film feels like a almost like a summer camp movie, because you're in this practically deserted hotel complex, which kind of would be not dissimilar to Camp Crystal Lake, except with proper toilets.
Well, one thing that miniseries that came out a few years back, Harper's Island, really reminds me a lot of I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, because it's also set on an island and this little kind of secluded little hotel, and it's all kind of misty, rainy atmosphere. It's not as silly as I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, but it definitely has that atmosphere to it. Mm.
Did one thing, just because I know, I think this film, like the first film, ended with Julie James at the going for a shower, and it says I Still Know on the glass, doesn't it? And then the killer jumps through. It's never explained what that was, because obviously she wasn't killed at the end of the first film. But
must be a dream. I always assume it's a dream, and the same with the ending of the second one.
Me too.
Well, I think it's pretty much implied that it is a dream, because she's having a dream at the beginning, so it's kind of like a recurring theme for her now. So they just don't explicitly say it was a dream or anything.
I thought I read something interesting on a theory, and I don't think that this kind of thought went into it, but they say at the end, she's, you know, everyone's dead, well, not everyone, but the threat has been neutralized, you think, and then she's just brought her home with Freddie Prinze Jr., and he's brushing his teeth, and then she's walking around the house, but everything is white in the house, and everything is new. It's kind of, and someone put a theory that she's actually in an insane asylum.
Oh, so interesting.
She's actually in an institution, and so because everything's quite sterile and like white and around her, so I don't think they would have put that much thought into it. But obviously, she's having some kind of dream or relapse, isn't she? Because because the whole, I wondered with the voodoo thing, because obviously this is what they took. Possibly the link between I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer, which was the terrible sequel, which came out in 2006, was it, or 2008, where the fisherman comes back, but it's a zombie. And obviously, if you link, you know, zombies before George Romero, where the whole idea of the zombie was Caribbean, wasn't it? The idea of reanimating the dead through voodoo. So I wonder if that was the link about, you know, I think there was originally, I think if this film had been more successful at the box office, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a flop by any stretch, it made something like 85 million worldwide, but it made about half the amount of money, or, you know, it wasn't as successful as they wanted it to be, but you would have thought they may well have done a third sequel. I think the idea was to do a sequel to the same characters again, which never came to pass, which is a real shame. But they did that. Has everyone seen I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer?
Yeah, yeah, it's awful.
It's awful.
Terrible.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even consider it, you know, canon, because it's just so bad. Yeah. Sometimes a film's so bad that I just kind of disregard it altogether. In a series, I mean. But
yeah. I mean, I really like, it's kind of, there's a kind of weird kind of beauty at the end of the film as well, isn't there? Because that song, which we heard a little bit at the beginning by Lamb, that kind of very mournful song, plays over the credits, then credits of I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, until it gets to Jennifer Love Hewitt's kind of cheesy song. It's quite kind of haunting, isn't it? It's quite unusual.
But, yeah.
But again, the director was Danny Cannon, who is British, another British director. And he directed the first Judge Dredd movie. It was kind of quite a haunting end, a very cheesy, but still quite haunting end for like a very cheesy movie, I thought. But any more thoughts before we get on to some feedback? Not feedback, background.
Just a couple of things. I mean, one, you know, I've said it already, but, you know, the cinematographers they hire for these films, you know, really outdoes anything they did in Scream, for my money. Just capturing, you know, overcast skies and just gloom all around. They do it. It's such a fantastic job here. I think that, you know, for me, I do love the Scream films, or the first two more than the last two. But for me, you know, the I Know What You Did Last Summer series, or those two first films, just kind of wiped the floor with anything before and after in that kind of era with just the great photography. I really love it.
Cool. I mean, any other thoughts? What about you, Eric or Nathan? Anything else you wanted to add?
No. I was just going to say I love the I know you're saying about the Lamb song you like. I also love the Kula Shaker cover version of Hush that plays in the first one, and also it's on the trailer for the second one. I thought it was quite good.
Is that a cover? Is that a cover version?
I think it's Deep Purple. Is it?
Yeah, Deep Purple did the original version.
I never knew that.
Did any of you actually guess that Will was in on it?
I don't recall. I did. No.
No.
But in hindsight. It looks kind of obvious, but that's easy to say.
But it's also, there was a misdirection, wasn't there? Because there were things, if you watch for it, there were a couple of little pointers, wasn't it? Because when she says, when he's on the plane and he's flying out and he's really scared, and she said something about having a happy childhood, and he said, well, what about us, people who never had a happy childhood? Things like the little throwaway lines.
And the fact that he's so comfortable on the boat then, after the airplane scene.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, they tried the misdirection with the Estes character, because I think Estes probably knew that he was Ben's son because Ben spent time on that island. But I think the one rule of thumb in these films when picking out a mystery killer is just look at the person who's so unrelentingly nice. I mean, this guy's like so nice through the whole film. He's not got like a mean bone in his body, so you just know at the very end he's going to turn out to be an asshole. So.
I didn't think it was going to be a whodunit, because the first one, I thought it was just following what the first one did.
Mm,
you know, the first one wasn't really a whodunit, so I just thought, oh, well, it's just Ben Willis.
Yeah. Did any of us twig that they got the question wrong at the start?
No.
And the quiz?
I don't know anything about geography.
I did.
I knew about that fact before I saw the film, so but I think I know that Brasilia is the capital of Brazil, I'm proud to say. So I don't know what my reaction would have been if I'd been, oh my god, this script is so stupid, it's got this fact wrong. Justin, can you remember your reaction?
I can't remember actually, but I know that they obviously the you know, sometimes we see reviews, people go, it's so stupid, but of course the whole point of it was
exactly was that, yeah, I thought, yeah, that was quite clever of them to do that as well,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, because it was kind of like you say that a lot of it had been left to chance, and if they'd gone, no, I'm actually, it's Brasilia, you haven't got it but you still want a holiday, they might be, oh, that's a bit odd.
Yes.
So that was pretty funny. I think it's you know, ultimately I think there's probably still a lot of people who avoid this film or saw it when it first came out and really hated it, because I know that for a long time I'd never met, but most people I knew hated this movie, and most of the online criticism of the film has been that it's awful film. But I think, you know, I would urge anyone, if you're listening to this and you've written this off, to go back and watch it with an open mind, and watch it for the kind of trashy fun that it is, rather than trying to hope, you know, wanting it to be a highly intelligent movie, because it's not aiming to be that. It's just aiming to be a fun slasher movie, and I think I never understood the hatred for this and Urban Legend when people were saying how wonderful films like Happy Birthday to Me or My Bloody Valentine or any of those films were, because I couldn't really see the difference in their approach, really. They were trying to be what they were, you know, which was popcorn slasher movies, and that's, you know, that's what we love. So I didn't get the impression, if I got the impression that I thought the people who were making them hated the movies, hated the you know, and we were taking the piss out of them, and they had a contempt for the audience, but I don't feel that with these films. I mean, Jamie Blanks with Urban Legend is a fan of the slasher movie. I don't know if Danny Cannon was particularly a fan of slasher movies, but I certainly didn't get the impression that this film was made with any contempt towards its audience at all.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Danny Cannon really had nothing to lose after Judge Dredd. No. So he couldn't really just pick up any project he wanted and treat it with disdain. I mean,
I thought you guys said that was a good movie.
No, that's Dredd.
Dredd is the good one.
Yeah,
there was another one in the 1995 with Sylvester Stallone as Judge Dredd, and I went to see it in the cinema. I thought it was okay. I haven't seen it in 20 years, but it was a huge flop critically and commercially, I think. So I don't think Danny Cannon was in a position to be treating anything with disdain.
Well, I mean, if you ask a lot of the fans of the first film who saw I Still Know What You Did Last Summer and did not like it, if they felt, you know, contempt, they'd say something like, well, the fact that they cast a pop star, you know, as one of the girls was insulting. But maybe I'm alone here, but I actually liked Brandy in this film. Am I alone?
So did I. I'd like to see her. I thought she was quite good.
She's a great character, you know, and she's quite good, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought she was pretty good. I thought Mickey Pfeiffer?
Mackay Pfeiffer.
Mackay Pfeiffer. I saw him in a film recently, and I saw, what was it? I can't remember now. But he was he's still making quite a few films now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, let's get on to some background. So, Nathan, do you have anything for us?
This movie features an actress named Brandy, who is a pop star, or was.
Well, there you go. Thank you. What about you, Joseph?
The only thing I have is I actually interviewed Muse Watson a long time ago, you know, about a year or two after this movie came out. And then, you know, I asked him which movie he preferred, and he actually said he preferred the second one because he just, you know, he liked the whole, you know, like I said, he liked the whole atmosphere of it, and because he's like an old sea dog type guy. So he actually preferred this one over the first one. He said he had a lot more fun on it.
Cool. Okay. Excellent. Well, what about you, Eric?
Okay. Well, we were saying director Danny Cannon had done Judge Dredd. Before that, he did a film called The Young Americans, starring Harvey Keitel. And this film was originally offered, and I don't know how true this is, to Peter Jackson. Now, Peter Jackson would have been not the name he is now, but he would have been pretty high profile. He had done The Frighteners and Heavenly Creatures at this stage, so I'm not sure how true that is. Henry Thomas of E.T. fame was originally up for the role of Will Benson, but lost out to Matthew Settle. Jack Black, as we were saying, is uncredited. I'm not sure why. I don't know if we ever uncovered why he was uncredited. I don't think he's anything to be ashamed of, because he appeared in a film the same year called Johnny Skidmarks. So I know which film of the two I'd want my name removed from. It was filmed from April to July of 1998 and opened on November the 13th, 98. This one didn't make number one in the box office. It debuted at number two behind the god-awful Waterboy, starring Adam Sandler, which was in its second week at number one. But it did open ahead of Meet Joe Black, which was released the same day. The Box Office Mojo says that the budget for this film was $65 million, which it is definitely not. That's a mistake, if ever I saw one. IMDb says $25 million, which is probably more like it. The Bahamas scenes were actually not shot in the Bahamas. They were done in Mexico. And that is all I have for it, except for the fact that it did open seven months after over here in the UK and Ireland after it did in the States. So I knew a lot of the stuff that was going to happen because I had a friend who was eager to spoil movies for me at the time. So, those were the days of the sort of gap between the US and UK cinema release, which doesn't really happen that often now. Justin?
I'd be very upset with that friend.
It didn't bother me at the time, but like there are one or two things, and I still know what you did last summer that I would have liked to have not known. So,
Well, I think I found it quite difficult to find trivia on this, yes. On this movie. Surprisingly, I think just when you say about Peter Jackson being up for it, do you remember he was mooted as a director for Halloween 6?
Was he up for Halloween 6? I know that Quentin Tarantino was at one stage.
I think it was him as well. I'm sure his name was mooted about for that. But again, how true all these things are, you know, it's difficult to know, isn't it? One thing I did just trivia I forgot to mention from the last movie was that Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sarah Michelle Gellar both auditioned for the opposite roles to each other, which would have been interesting. So Sarah Michelle Gellar would have ended up as Judy James. Jennifer Love Hewitt as Helen. So I don't know how that dynamic would have worked. And of course, Sarah Michelle Gellar fell in love with Freddie Prinze Jr. And they've been married ever since, haven't they? In real life,
are they still married?
I think so. They are.
Yeah,
a Hollywood wedding that lasted more than 6 months.
Apparently, Freddie Prinze Jr. was recently. I don't really know what happened, but apparently he was paralyzed or something, and something happened with his back, and he had back surgery, and then he had to basically spend like, you know, a month in the hospital learning to re-walk again. You can look it up. It was in the news like a couple months back, but you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar was there with him the whole way. So,
because you know his father was famous, wasn't he? And he committed suicide when he was a baby. I think you said pretty much everything else. I said the film kind of made something. I think it was like you said, I saw that about the budget being 65 million, which is complete, you know, rubbish. I think 25 million is more likely, because the film has a bigger budget feel to it than the first film, doesn't it?
Still sounds like a lot for this type of film, but I mean, considering the first one made so much, I suppose they could splash out a bit.
Yeah. So I don't know why. I suppose Kevin Williamson was very much in demand, wasn't he? I don't know if he was asked to write a sequel to this or to a treatment like he did with the Scream films. I think that's... I mean, the film got like something like 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. I saw it saying it's boring, predictable and bereft of thrills or chills. I still know what you did last summer is exactly the kind of rehash that gives horror sequels a bad name, is one critic said of the film at the time. But as we're trying to reclaim it as a fun slash movie, because I think people saw Scream as it was more of a cause célèbre, wasn't it? It was something that was a pop culture thing but with critics they liked it because they saw it was, they couldn't understand why there was a need for straight ahead non-comedic slasher movies, and I think they were annoyed that films like this made money, although as we know it didn't make as much money as they probably were expecting, which is why we didn't get a third film, a direct follow-up, which is a real shame. But I think there was I'm sure I read somewhere way way back before I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer came out that there was supposed to be, the original story was supposed to have Julie James out hiking, something to do with that, some kind of backwoods thing,
and then that would have been interesting.
Well, I mean, as we know, with any of like the Halloween sequels, there's like a million every time they do a Friday 13th for a Halloween film. Recent ones, there seems to be like a million people write treatments. Like Freddy versus Jason had about, I don't know, 100 treatments and people writing different scripts and going through things. So there's always a lot of changes happen. But unfortunately, it did get followed up by the god-awful sequel, which I barely remember, apart from I seem to remember it had kind of quite a good opening at a fun fair, and then it kind of trails completely off. But who knows what the remake's going to bring?
I just remembered a bit of trivia.
Okay.
Jennifer Love Hewitt and Muse Watson, as their characters, hosted Saturday Night Live.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah, because she made him apologize for killing her friends and trying to kill her.
Okay, excellent.
And he did give her an apology.
Well, there you go. It's a gentleman.
I remember that.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'm sorry that I killed your friends and tried to kill you. And I'm sorry I killed your friends in the sequel and tried to kill you then, too.
Excellent.
Did you know that Muse Watson was in I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Was he?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's trivia for you. So, well, I hope you have enjoyed our little look back at I Know What You Did Last Summer and its first sequel. We'll write in and let us know. And this is the way to do it. We're going to come back with a little bit of feedback. But if you would like to write into the show and let us know what you think about it, that would be good. If I can actually find the playback things I'm talking, here we go.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, so yeah, please write in. But who would like to give some feedback?
I will.
Give some, read some. Okay.
Yeah, here we go. This is from Corey in Colorado. That's a frequent writer to the podcast. Hey guys, first of all, I want to leave some feedback for the Terror at Ten Killer Blood Lake episode. Fuck you, Nathan.
Corey doesn't like me.
Please take this in jest. I don't really mean it. Sarcasm doesn't work well in print. I wrote in last year about an awesome film festival I went to called the Stanley Film Festival. The films I saw there and mentioned maybe didn't have much weight to them at the time, but so I do think maybe you guys may have brushed them off a little bit. Here's a few of the movies I saw last April. The Babadook, Late Phases, Open Windows, Housebound, The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, Blood Glacier, The Sacrament, and Starry Eyes. I'm sure all of these sound pretty familiar now, and Nathan, I agree with you about Late Phases, but I probably hate it more than you. Oh yeah, I almost forgot. The Green Inferno had a secret screening. I enjoyed it, but really only for the gore. Most of the characters were unlikable, and the first third was pretty boring. It really is just an updated version of Cannibal Holocaust. There's one more movie I saw and loved that I haven't heard anybody anywhere mention. Nothing Bad Can Happen. It's not a slasher, it's not even a horror, but it's one of the most disturbing movies I've seen in a while. If you get a chance, see it. Anyway, this year's Stanley Film Festival is coming up at the beginning of May. Is there anything I should keep an eye out for? What horror releases are you guys anticipating this year? One last thing. As awesome as you all are, I doubt you'll ever get hired to do a commentary for Halloween or Friday the 13th, but you could always do your own. I'm sure Joseph and Nathan are familiar with Riff Tracks, so something like that. As long as you don't use their video or audio, rights shouldn't be an issue. You could have it as a special podcast or a reward in Nathan and Joseph's Kickstarter, or just do one every few months. Have you guys ever considered doing unauthorized commentaries? What movies would you do? Thanks again for that. Thanks again for all that you four do, Corey in Colorado. And then Corey follows up that email by saying, P.S. The Stanley Film Festival announced their lineup right after I sent their last email. Let me know if you've heard anything about any of these movies. And he lists the movies they're going to show. I have to say, I have heard of precious few of them. Body, The Boy, Deathgasm, The Final Girls. I think we've heard of that one. Cooties, Goodnight Mommy, The Hollow, The Invitation, Let Us Pray, Over Your Dead Body, Scherzo Diabolico, Shrew's Nest, Some Kind of Hate, Stung, Sunchoke, The Treatment, We Are Still Here, and When Animals Dream. Now, the only one of those I've heard of is The Final Girls.
I've heard of The Final Girls and We Are Still Here. We Are Still Here is written and directed by my old friend Ted from the Diabolical Dominion.
All right. Yeah. As for doing riff track type unauthorized commentaries... Well, we kind of do that. The podcast is kind of that, really, isn't
it? Yeah. It kind of is. I was just going to mention just one of the films he did. He mentioned Cooties, which I think it's got Elijah Wood in it.
It's I've heard of that.
It's the one with the kind of, I think it's a nursery or where the kids go become like zombies or attack the teachers.
Oh, cool. That sounds interesting, actually.
That sounds like quite good fun. And there was another one they mentioned on there, which I can't remember which it was now, but that I have heard of, and I can't remember. So I won't make you read them all again, but Cooties is the one that jumped out.
I don't know which one.
No, don't worry. Yeah, no, it's fine. But it's good that there's still loads of horror movies coming out, so that's all that good stuff. But as far as unauthorized commentaries... we've got a quite a lot of things in the pipeline for authorized commentaries, haven't we, at the moment? And like you say, in some ways, these if we're talking about not unauthorized, but our Savage Water commentary is essentially now not an unauthorized, but it's not actually out, is it? People can download it and use it, but. But I don't know, because there was talk about Savage Water coming out by the director, wasn't it, at some point?
Well, if he does, yeah, I'm kind of hoping he'll port our commentary over.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've obviously got the Madman commentary coming out from Vindica Syndrome, the Gary Sayles got in contact, didn't he, and said he asked if we could, he'd be happy for us to use it on other English-speaking territory, so we're not quite sure what that means, but that might indicate that it's going to be put on other releases. But we do have a couple of upcoming ones. I've just done a commentary with Callum Waddle for the UK 88 Films release of X-Ray, and we are, I'm not sure if we can announce it yet, but we will collectively be doing a commentary for a film coming out on Blu-ray by a UK company for a film that we've covered on the podcast.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Really looking forward to that.
Yeah. So we'll hopefully have more news on that soon. But yeah, I think it's at the moment for us, you know, to be honest, it's difficult enough for us to find time that we can all get together, because I'm being on different continents and different jobs and, you know, various other commitments. It's, you know, it's as much as we love doing it, we have to. It's quite tight. Isn't it, Eric?
It's very tight.
So, okay. Well, who would like to... thank you, Corey.
But yes, and he's seen The Green Inferno. Is anyone else looking forward to that? Yes. I'm not personally, because I'm not into cannibal movies, but...
Well, I do want to see it because the idea of a cannibal film being released, you know, in like a wide release. I don't think it's going to happen now, but my viewpoint was I'd really like to see a cannibal film at a wide release just for the shock factor of it.
I mean, I'd be happy to watch a cannibal film that had no animal stuff in it, and I'm presuming obviously this doesn't. So
I would assume, yeah, in this day and age, it wouldn't be allowed, but.
But yeah, to be honest, I was never a massive fan of the cannibal genre anyway, regardless, because I always kind of avoided it. But I find Eli Roth's films kind of pretty hit or miss, really.
Yes.
Has anyone seen Clown?
I really want to.
No, because that's just come out on DVD over here, so I might sort of try and check that out. But yeah. That's kind of more interesting seeing that, and obviously I would have liked to have seen the slasher movie that he was going to do that was trailered in the Grindhouse film
Thanksgiving.
Since we're talking about movies coming out, I just want to give a quick shout out to a friend here in Chattanooga who's actually making a horror film. He's his name is Christopher Myron. He's making a slasher film called Pitching the Tent. If you have a chance, go to Facebook and just look up Pitching the Tent and maybe give the page a like. It looks like it'd be a pretty fun little movie.
Mm. Does Pitching the Tent mean the same thing in the States?
Yes. It's a double entendre, definitely. Yeah, but okay. Right. It's basically about, you know, a group of, I guess, you know, teenagers or 20-somethings camping out after a party on Halloween night. And, you know, they get stalked and killed out in the woods. I'm guessing out in the woods or whatever. But it's got a neat poster and it sounds like a fun time. And I'm going to, you know, help him out a little bit on set. So check that out.
And it features one of the stars of The Night Before Easter.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, that sounds good. And how's things progressing with Gory Graduation?
Basically, we're just supposed to meet with this principal fellow in May after the school year ends, just to give a rundown of when we need the school and how long we're going to shoot there. And I've got basically a boatload of equipment on its way here. We didn't raise as much as we needed, but I think after, you know, going over everything, we can get things done. It'll be a little tight, you know, as Justin likes to say, but we'll make it happen still.
Cool. Okay. That sounds good. Well, fingers crossed that all goes swimmingly. But who have we got? Joseph, have you got anything for us?
No, I don't have anything this week.
Nathan, you haven't either, have you?
No, I don't.
No. Okay. Well, I have an email from Steve Yott. He says, "Hey guys, just finished listening to the Blood Lake Terror at 10 Killer podcast. I always try and watch the movies you're covering before listening to the show, but this was a real chore to get through, Nathan. I'd seen 10 Killer before, so I knew what I was getting myself into, but Blood Lake was the first time viewing for me. While 10 Killer is just tedious, Blood Lake has its charms. Not many, but a few. The podcast, as always, was a lot of fun. I stumbled upon you guys around the time you covered My Bloody Valentine. I've been a fan ever since. I'm looking forward to your 100th episode and hope you hang around to at least 200. Also enjoy your commentaries as well, so hopefully there's more of those to come. And a big thumbs up for Johnny Krug. Bring him back any time. I'm hoping to take your takes on It Follows soon. I was able to check this out at the theatre recently and thought it was fantastic. Take care and looking forward to my Gory Graduation listener pick in the near future. Hint, safety pins and judo chops."
I know what that is. Nathan, I don't think you gave your opinion on It Follows, did you?
Did I? I don't know, but I thought it was excellent. I mean, okay. I thought it's well worth the hype. It's a fantastic film, and me and my friend Melissa are going to watch it today again.
Oh, great. Excellent.
Good stuff. One film I forgot to mention, I just wondered if any of you seen it, and Eric, I'm curious if you have, was A Wreck Apocalypse. The new Wreck film?
I still haven't seen the third Wreck film, the one set at the wedding.
Oh, have you not?
No.
Well,
is it good?
That's really good. I really like that one. That was much better than part two, I thought. It was.
I loved part two.
Well, part two was okay, but it's part three is completely different because it's a kind of prequel, but it's at a wedding where an outbreak happens at the reception. Cool. And it's really, I thought it's quite different to the other films because it jettisons the first, you know, the point of view found footage thing quite early on. And the fourth one doesn't have that at all, really. But the fourth one's set on a boat, but it brings back the woman from the first film as the main character. And it's kind of an outbreak on a boat. So basically, they're all kind of outbreaks in various things. But yeah, I thought Wreck Apocalypse was pretty good fun. But the third one was, I thought, was really entertaining. So definitely worth checking out. So, I think we are, we're coming to the end of the 99th episode. So we've got the 100th episode, haven't we?
Telegram from the Queen.
Exactly. That's you, and so hopefully you'll all be aboard with our next pick, as a hint. Does anyone
choo
want to
choo.
Tell?
Choo-choo. Yeah. Choo-choo.
Yes. And there will be no horse jokes, hopefully.
No, there won't be. There won't be, I promise.
Better not.
Okay. We are going to be hopping aboard the Terror Train for the 100th episode. So one of the biggie slashers that we've not covered yet, we thought is high time to do so. Although a lot of people on the forums have given us some great suggestions. Obviously, it'd be good to cover Psycho. I would like to do a Psycho 2 double bill. I think that would be quite fun.
Yeah.
But that will be coming up in the future. But next time, we are going to get aboard the Terror Train. So back to 1979, and we'll be donning our disguises and bumping off coeds one by one. So
in a frock, in a frock. Delightful wig.
Yes. So I think we'll be playing out with a bit of Cooler Shaker and a little bit of lamb mixed up. Anything else to say?
We hope you're hooked on our show after 99 episodes.
Exactly. Yes. Well, thanks for listening, and thank you for making the Hysteria Continues success that it isn't quite yet, but it might do one day. So we're hoping to get into double figures listeners, but we may do one of these days. So I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoy recording it. So join us for our anniversary show next time. So say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye, good people.
Goodbye, good people.
Goodbye.
Before we start, I'm just going to warn you, it's quite a long one.
There's Eric's door.
You've got incredible bowels. They film it in Ireland.
Although he's kind of skinny for you, isn't he?
No, he's okay. But he's kind of killy. And
yeah, he's a little killy.
So you don't like them killy?
No.
No. This